You're back here with the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Don Beisel Jr. here with my good friend and co-host, Gary Heasley. We spoke a lot about last stuff in the last hour, and we're going to continue that conversation. But before we go, I do want to recognize, I lost a great friend this weekend, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention my good friend Rosemary Mackel, who passed away unexpectedly. I was at her viewing and funeral on Wednesday. Lifelong friend, staunch conservative, great friend. And I wanted to recognize her friendship over the years, and I will miss her greatly. She was a great lady. Knew how to have fun, I will tell you that. And that's all I'm going to go there. So, but I did want to take a moment to recognize Rosemary Mackel, a really wonderful person, and she will be greatly missed. And I said to Sam when I came in today, I said, I'm tired of all my friends dying. I said, you know, ego. And Sam's answer was great. He said, just get younger friends. So I guess that's one way to look at it, you know? So yeah. Anyway, you know, we hit on some great points, Garrett, in the last hour with Senator Mastriano. So I guess we'll continue on with the FISA discussion first. Let's get into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting situation where they roll this reauthorization of FISA Section 702 into the National Defense Bill. And as we talked about in the last hour, that means that if you oppose it, you're not a patriot. You don't support the military. You get the full pushback for not supporting our war machine. And then if you point out that, well, wait a minute, this is an unconstitutional weapon that's been used against the public over and over again, well, of course, then they'll come up with some other charges and just try to discredit anyone that stands against it. Here's the problem. It's so few Republicans who stand up against this. Senator Mike Lee has been communicating on this for weeks now and really pushing it hard and pushing it very publicly. But the Republican Party, once again, damages its brand by not standing up for the American people, not standing up to defend the Constitution, but rather having a massive number of Republicans support the reauthorization. And I understand this idea of the art of the possible and that politics is a negotiation. Yeah, I understand. But there are some things that are not negotiable and that that the Republicans in elected office have tools to use that they refuse to use. So this isn't about being radical or extremist. This is just pure common sense. Every Republican in the legislature and in the Congress, both houses, should have voted against this. This should never have made it through the House. And if that means you shut down the whole National Defense Authorization Act, so be it. We're spending $1 trillion on defense. We're rolling around in defense money. There's no shortage of that. I recognize that there's a lot of pork in those in that bill as well. So there are a lot of representatives and senators who are saying, wait a minute, I can't worry about the Constitution. The senior center that I'm going to get funded and get to go to a ribbon cutting for is funded by this bill. You know, there's this all of these grants that go out through the military in the name of military and defense, whether or not they're related to defense or not. It's a huge money laundering operation that this National Defense Authorization Act supports, just like every other bill that comes through Congress. So there's tremendous pressure on these representatives and senators to just go along and continue pushing these anti-constitutional elements of government, and so they cave.
Well, you know,
I don't think they have any understanding. This is the question we touched on last hour. I don't think many of them understand the damage they're doing because they don't think the public is paying attention, and they're right for most of the public, but they don't understand, and some don't care how much damage they do to the Republican brand. And they are destroying the brand. I don't know anyone who's running around saying, look what the Republicans did this week, this month, this year.
Right.
No one. That hasn't happened since they removed Trump from office.
Absolutely correct. You know, a lot of the things that – so one thing that people don't realize, so Section 702 of the FISA reauthorization, first of all, this did not even have to be in the NDAA because it doesn't expire for another 4 months anyway. Okay, so they threw it in there with the hopes of it getting through because it's, again, it's hidden into a larger bill. It's a small piece of a big pie. Okay, and so, you know, they understood that if they tried to get this through with a smaller bill or on a standalone bill, that it would probably not pass because it would be under so much scrutiny. And so this again goes to the playing politics part of the equation. And they seem to be more than willing to play politics with the individual rights and freedoms guaranteed the public in the U.S. Constitution.
That's right. It is unacceptable that they're doing what they're doing. Now, we look at what the Republicans just did in taking out this radical McCarthy globalist, you know, spender, what I call the spender of the House. This guy was such a problem. They got rid of him. Now they get Mike Johnson in there. He yields on this. He absolutely surrenders on all points of this. So the Republican voters now stand up there scratching their head and saying, wait a minute, is there anyone that we can count on? Well, of course there are. There's Andy Biggs and Matt Gaetz and Jim Jordan and a few that'll stand up. Senator Mike Lee from Utah has become once again sort of an energized conservative constitutionalist. There are some that can be relied on, but there just aren't enough to make a difference because the party as a whole does not stand against 702. It's
right.
Not part of their philosophy because, frankly, I don't know what the Republican Party's philosophy is. I don't know what they fight for now, but this is just individuals who have the courage to stand up. Now, that comes back to a point made earlier, which is that if we have a candidate that's worthwhile, then we should all support that candidate. That's something that the party would like you to give money to them so they can then reallocate it back to the candidates. Well, that just never happens. We saw that in 2022. We saw it in 2023. There was no money coming into Pennsylvania to fight the battle here. And that's not just true of Pennsylvania. In Ohio, there was an issue won about abortion on the ballot over there. And there was some national money that came in from pro-life groups, but really no significant amount, nothing near what the leftists put on there in the abortion enthusiast camp. And, of course, the abortion enthusiasts were successful in getting abortion rights up to the moment of birth made into a constitutionally protected right in Ohio. I'm not sure if we understand how important this is. This is a state where you've got Republican governor, Republican Senate, and a Republican House in the state legislature, and they just got a radical, really almost bizarre, a pro-abortion amendment ratified into the Constitution by putting it on the ballot. Now, in Ohio, it only takes 50% plus one vote to make something a constitutional amendment, amendment to the Constitution. So the hurdle is very low as compared to other states. But in a state that has complete Republican control, you would think they could rally the donors to fight this. They could figure out the messaging. They could come out and have defeated this act, but they can't.
Right.
And they didn't. And frankly, the governor didn't do much to fight this.
Well, they probably didn't want to because they didn't want to offend anybody.
Well, that's part of it. And at some point, you just realize it's not just that they don't want to offend the Democrats. They don't want to offend the screeching harpies, the radicals that yell at us all the time. It's that, in fact, they don't believe in the things we believe in.
Right.
Right.
That's what it gets down to, Gary. You've talked about this before, and you know, we agree on this point that right now the Republican Party has no product to sell. In other words, if you wanted to list what the general Republican Party stands for, you couldn't because it's all over the board. It's, you know, you have the folks like us, the moderates, that believe in the Constitution, and we believe in individual rights and freedoms and parental rights and life and Second Amendment and stuff like that. We can list what we believe in, and we stand proudly by that. But the party as a whole, we're pro-life, but you know what? Well, you know, there can be exceptions, 13 weeks, 15 weeks, 23 weeks, whatever, you know. By the way, we'll still fund Planned Parenthood even though they're giving abortions because, you know, we don't want to piss them off, you know.
Right.
You know,
and we won't.
Yeah.
And we won't stand up and actually take on a real fight ever for anything.
Right.
And then you've got these, you know, staunch moderates like the Freedom Caucus people who say very clearly, we defend the Constitution. We don't support this ridiculous and corrupt government spending. I mean, really solid, moderate viewpoints that these Freedom Caucus member have, Freedom Caucus members have in the U.S. House. Well, flip over to the Pennsylvania House, and we've got a Freedom Caucus there now.
Yes.
And it is the largest in the nation. It's 22 members and a few supporting members outside that aren't named, but are definitely voting in a way that is supportive of that agenda, that moderate, pro-Constitution, fiscally conservative agenda. And there's a group you can actually rally around. Now, the mission for, I think, the Republican voter is probably to figure out how to take people like that and move them into leadership positions.
Yes.
Because if you look at the leadership, say, on the House side, this guy named Cutler, he's absolutely supports the Democrat agenda. It's clear. He organizes no fights. He does great client service in his district. But they don't know how he's voting because they don't pay attention. They think he's the local boy done good, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So we have to shift this so that the moderates, like the Freedom Caucus people, take over the leadership positions, and the radicals like Cutler, who support the Democrat agenda, get pushed out.
Absolutely.
If the local voter wants to make him their representative, of course, that's their choice. But he should not be standing for us as a leader because he has no leadership skills, and his agenda, his belief system, his values, his principles, his legislative agenda is contrary to what the Republican voter, the conservative constitutionalist, what the average American person, the moderate group, believe in.
Yep.
And he refuses to fight.
Absolutely. So one of the things I want to do, because I know a lot of people, you know, don't, you know or are aware of exactly what Section 702 is. So I'm gonna read a good summation of it, because I think this pretty much sums it up. Because I'd like to keep so people are informed of exactly what it is. So Section 702 is an incredibly controversial surveillance tool, and it's been long criticized by Democrats and Republicans alike. Although the law requires the government to direct this surveillance at people outside the United States, in practice, it routinely ensnares Americans. Section 702 allows the government to, and this is what they've just reinstated now, so you need to know this. Section 702 allows the government to target any foreigner abroad for warrantless surveillance to obtain foreign intelligence information. The government's targets need not have any connection to criminal activity or terrorism. They could be journalists, human rights workers, or business people communicating about the foreign affairs of the United States. In the course of this surveillance, the government vacuums up, without a warrant, the communications of countless Americans who have texted, called, messaged, or emailed any one of hundreds of thousands of foreign targets. After collecting these communications, the FBI, CIA, and NSA deliberately search through their Section 702 databases, again, without a warrant, to find the communications of Americans they're interested in. These warrantless queries, also known as backdoor searches, are an anathema to a free society and violate our bedrock Fourth Amendment rights. In recent years, yes, go ahead.
That's a great explanation of what this is, and so what you're saying is, this Section 702 allows them to spy on these foreign operators, foreign citizens, foreign people doing business in the United States or overseas, but then anytime those people communicate with a U.S. citizen, they capture the U.S. person's communication,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
But then the U.S. person is supposed to be masked.
Yes.
They're supposed to be masked so that the government can't see who they are. And what we saw in the lighter days of the Obama administration is that Samantha Power, who was the ambassador to the United Nations, she had the authority to unmask. And because the DNC, who of course she works for, wanted to get more information on their political rivals, she went through a lot of unmasking requests, and her requests were granted. So for reasons, absolutely no justification, there was no explanation of why the ambassador to the United Nations would, A, have the power to unmask, or why they would have any interest in knowing what American citizens were saying. Why she's not supposed to be part of the intelligence community, or she's not part of the Defense Department. She's not looking for some foreign criminals or domestic people that are coordinating with terror. That's not what she's doing. She was doing that to facilitate her party getting information they could not otherwise get, and they were doing it with Samantha Power because no one would ever think to check to see if she was unmasking.
Right.
Well, she got found out. And, of course, the biggest piece of this was, and I think most people have forgotten this now, many of your listeners I'm sure know, but in the Russia collusion hoax, the only person convicted of a crime in the Russian collusion hoax was an FBI attorney who faked evidence to the FISA court, to the secret court. He faked evidence to the secret court to get the NSA, the intelligence community, to be able to spy on one of Trump's associates, obviously fully intending to capture information on Trump. And when I say he faked it, it was completely fabricated. The evidence that he put forth to the FISA court was completely false. So this guy's name, I think, was Kevin Kleinsmith. He then pled guilty, but he wasn't disbarred. That guy, he's doing fine because he was executing that not on behalf of the nation, but on behalf of his party. And what was the pushback from the Republican Party during the Russia collusion hoax? It was limited at best. A few people pushed back hard, but this wasn't exactly something the party was going scorched earth on.
Right.
So the FBI lied to the FISA court. Now, the question I want to know is, did the FISA court actually believe that this hokey evidence was real? Everyone knows whatever the FBI puts forward to the FISA court approves. So did the FISA court, were they actually fooled? You know, as they later claimed, or did they actually know that they were conspiring with this FBI agent, this FBI official, to spy illegally on U.S. citizens? Well, I suspect they may have known.
Well, I'm glad you just said that, because one of the things that I think, so again, what people need to realize is, so what the FBI has done is they have used 702 to warrant, you know, without a warrant, to search their databases and to basically to find communications from American citizens who are protesters, racial justice activists, and individuals of suspected involvement in the January 6th Capitol breach, 19,000 donors to a congressional campaign, and even members of Congress. Now, I can tell you that this is an absolute fact because I have a friend of mine, and she's been a guest on this show. She wrote a great book. Who was not at January 6th, but the FBI came knocking on her door to investigate her for her involvement in January 6th. She wasn't there. Okay, so how did they get her name? Because she communicated with people who were there. Okay, so obviously probably through this, they use those communications to track her down. Even though she wasn't there, didn't breach the Capitol because she wasn't even in Washington, D.C. Interesting. But when you start putting the pieces together, now you know how they got to her. Because they had access to her communications.
Yeah, and this is what Mike Lee is talking about in his recent post, which have been encouraging. Because Mike Lee hasn't exactly stood with the citizens on things like mass migration. You know, he's been much more aligned with big tech's need for cheap workers or other folks' need for cheap labor. But he really went after this one hard. And the point is, like much of the Department of Justice, this tool has been weaponized against the American citizen. And it's not hidden. It's not like that. That's not a controversial statement. That's just taken as a given. So they use this to go after people so they could find out who the political enemy is. And of course, as we all know, with January 6th, they put the guy from the Oath Keepers in prison for years, and he wasn't there either. It's watching this happen in front of us. I was speaking yesterday to two folks, one who had come here from Cuba and I think moved here when she was 40. And the other one had come from the Soviet Union. And when you speak to people who lived in those systems, and we've all had this experience, so I know this isn't unique, but it is important. when we talk to people who have come from those oppressive nations, unless they've come recently from China at the behest of the Chinese Communist Party, the people who came here to get away from oppression, the people who escaped these oppressive cultures, are looking at what's happening in our DOJ and our government as a whole, the amount of corruption, the amount of sort of mass money laundering that's going on, and they are terrified because they see this nation slipping down the same slope as Venezuela, going down the same slope as Cuba, turning into the Soviet Union. Think about this. We're supposed to have a free market economy, right? That's what we believe. But 2 days ago, an unelected government official, effectively, I'm talking about the Fed chairman, not really government, but most people think it's government. So an unelected official makes a statement and the entire market changes. With just his statement, all the markets change, one man. That is a centrally planned economy. That is not a free market. So when you look at this FISA 702 and the fact that it wasn't resisted by any more than just a handful of standouts, but rather it was supported by the party as a whole, by both parties. When you look at what's going on with this surveillance, when you see where this is going, where our economy is really being driven by government, that is terrifying to people who have seen where this leads.
It's, you know, again, people, something like this, they, what they do, and this is why we're bringing this up, is they know that if most of the American public knew what was entailed in this bill, in this sort of surveillance, the majority of citizens would not go for it. They just wouldn't. People, I mean, on the surface, you don't even have to dig deep in this. If you look at this as it is presented, you know that this is just, it goes against everything that America is supposed to stand for. And yet, and that's why they try to slide it into these big bills. And look, and this isn't the only thing they've ever done this with, but this is just the latest example of what they, you know, I think what the term is, they throw pork into a bill or something like that. Well, this isn't pork. I mean, this is the whole friggin' pig. You know, I mean, you know, they're throwing the whole farm into this thing because this, more than anything else, what Section 702 does, it erodes your basic privacy rights as an American citizen. Okay, you know, and they can, you know, when you brought it up earlier, the whole masking thing. Okay, let's not be naive. Okay, if an intelligence agency has access to information, they're going to use it. I mean, and in their minds, they're going to justify it. They're going to say, "Oh, you know, it's for the protection of the country. It's for this. It's for that." You know, justification is a great thing. Everybody can justify something they've done. Okay, and you know, everybody can. You know, well, I cheated on that test because I had to pass. Because you know, if I didn't pass, I couldn't go out with my girlfriend over the weekend. You know, that's their justification. You know, I'm not saying it's right. But everybody in their mind, when they know something's wrong, they can figure out a way to justify it. And these intelligence agencies, they will justify the invasion of your individual rights and freedom and your privacy.
Absolutely, they do. And what's I think making this more alarming is that it's becoming more open. That these, you know, Christopher Wray sits in front of Congress and lies to them at every hearing that he appears for. He scoffs at them. He laughs at them. There is no effective government oversight. Anyone seeing that isn't a radicalized leftist, who isn't these people that are duped into believing that the government is their parent, or their best friend, the one, their caregiver. You know, anybody who sees that, who's a rational, moderate American, is going to look at that and be shocked to see a government official laugh in the face of the constitutionally mandated role of Congress,
and you know what people don't realize is that it's not just government. Okay, I mean, right now we're talking about the government and what they're doing because they have such great power and stuff like that. But try this experiment. Now, I don't have Alexa in my house, okay? But I've gone to people's houses that have Alexa, okay? So go to somebody's house that has Alexa and make sure you have your phone with you and talk about or mention some random thing that you probably never talked about before. And then when you go home, watch all the ads pop up on your phone. So if you think others are not listening, you're oblivious because others are listening. My wife made a comment to me the other day. She goes, you know, I did one search on the internet for, I forget what a product it was. And the next thing you know, Facebook and ads and email, she's getting all kinds of stuff on this one particular thing she was looking for. And I said to her, I said, that's why I use DuckDuckGo or whatever. I said, you know, I said, because I know if you go to Google, it goes everywhere. But try the Alexa thing. You know, I don't have it because of this very issue. But if go to somebody's house that has it, and if it's turned on, okay, which, you know, probably always is on, and then just mention, dogs. And the next thing you know, you'll have all kinds of ads on your phone when you go home about dogs and stuff like that. So just an experiment. Try it out.
But you make a really good point. That's why I say there are six branches to the federal government, right? You've got the executive, which steals the money. You've got the legislative, which steals the money. You've got the judiciary, which seems to write the law. They seem to be the legislature these days. And then you've got the administrative state and the deep state, that fourth branch that we all know too well now, who do have the power to write laws as a practical matter, not under the Constitution. But they're either delegated authority by the Congress or just their overall weight, the power they can bring to bear on institutions like school districts and on citizens is so overwhelming that when they write an edict, it is effectively law. And then you've got the fifth branch, which is, of course, corporate media. And so they get their daily talking points and they go out and repeat them over and over again. And if I was talking to, again, someone from the Soviet Union yesterday about Pravda and about NPR, CBS, and NBC, and how much better NBC, CBS, and NPR are than Pravda ever could have hoped to have been during the Soviet years. And she was commenting that, yeah, at the end of the Soviet Union, people laughed at what came out of Pravda and TASS because everyone knew it was nonsense. None of it was real. But here, people actually think that what NPR is saying or what CBS or ABC are saying, that it's true. And, of course, it's largely just endless propaganda.
Well, the funny thing is I actually have friends on the liberal side of the spectrum or, you know, whatever you want to call it, who tell me, they go, oh, yeah, you know, I don't listen to MSNBC or CNN. They're too radical. I only listen to NPR because they are objective and you know, right down the middle and you know, and I'm there, are you freaking kidding me? I mean,
you're making a great point. That's exactly what this woman was saying last night, that when she was a child in the Soviet Union or even an adult in the Soviet Union, because she came here as an adult, people were laughing at Pravda and TASS, but here they think this media is telling them the truth.
Right.
So those folks will never find out what's going on because they'll never go beyond these trusted sources. And it's all one message. And then there's the sixth branch of government, which is the corporations. Okay, if the Constitution means the government can't mandate masks and injections, the corporations will do it. You know, if you wanted to work in most any industry, well, you had to get injected if you worked in big corporate, because otherwise they would terminate you without any, you know, concern for your well-being or your performance. It had nothing to do with how good you were doing or how your division is doing or how much value you brought. None of that mattered. What mattered was the dogma coming from the government agencies that were saying thou must inject and must inject frequently.
And you know what, Gar?
Corporations took up that fight and delivered it. Well, they delivered it. They executed that deal.
What people don't realize is that what you just said, even though that was happening, because the COVID vaccine was still considered an experimental drug, requiring people to get injected with it was a violation of the law. And yet, the reason I was able to dig this up was because of what they were doing with the military. And because it was still at the time considered an experimental drug, it was a violation of the law for them to require even the military to get the shot. And this goes back to when they were injecting soldiers with LSD in the 50s and exposing them to the A-bomb radiation and stuff like that. So anything experimental was verboten for the military. And yet because
that's right.
But what people don't realize,
it was not legal under both U.S. law and the Nuremberg Code. It was not appropriate for the divisional manager for the widget factory to be telling you have to inject yourself with this untested,
right,
unknown foreign substance with technology never before used in human history. Did they have concern about the law?
No.
No, because the government then supports them because they are truly one with the government now.
Yes.
Right. So that's why they're the sixth branch of government. Now you roll over into the social media aspects, and you know that what you put up on Twitter, Facebook, or any of the other platforms is immediately going into a pipeline right through AT&T, Verizon, or whoever your ISP is, or directly from the Facebook servers or whomever, to the government. A complete and utter violation of the Fourth Amendment. It's absolutely destroying your constitutional rights, and yet we accept it as a people because people now say, you've heard them say it, well, we've lost our right to privacy. Well, why? And why doesn't, say, the Republican Party stand up to fight back on that? Well, of course, it's the overwhelming amount of cash that those internet companies now deploy into political campaigns. So you've got this corporate media big tech thing that is so effective. And the only thing standing really in their way are people like us, these moderate Republicans and these constitutional conservatives, the folks who are saying, listen, I want my Constitution back. I want a government that is restrained by that Constitution. That's what's standing in the way. Because Superman ain't coming. The party's not going to stand up. Right?
Well, that's certainly,
there's no
true.
No one else.
Well, it's
there are no billionaires that are going to come out and say, hey, listen, Delaware, Montgomery, Chester, and Philadelphia are critical markets in the United States because they determine what happens in the Keystone State, and the Keystone State determine what happens nationwide. So we're going to put money in there to fight on these issues. It's not happening. It is really up to the local population of business people. It's up to the local elected officials who can be, who will actually take up the fight, people like those in the Freedom Caucus. Doug's recent work on these two bills was exceptional. It was great work, and no one else is doing it, right? We got to find those people and get behind them and stand together as a force, and we have to realize we are the majority of a unified American populace. That 5% of the Republican Party that controls it, who are there for the opportunity, who don't really have an ideology any different than the radical globalist, the Kevin McCarthy's, those people are a minority in the Republican Party, certainly among the voter base, right? And then the 35% of the population that you could look at polls and they say, Biden's doing well and Harris is a good vice president, and they're beyond recovery. They'll never recover from what they've suffered at the hands of the propaganda and also the money they get from the party buys a lot of their loyalty. So, the government pumps into them through different government programs. Maybe they work at a university and they get grants, and to challenge the standard status of things today would be to challenge their future grant money flow. Right. Those people are never going to recover. They're always going to stand with the oppressor. But that middle 60%, that moderate, rational, common sense driven American 60%, that group's never been more unified. They do not want our borders to be undefended. They do not want to keep pumping countless billions of unaccounted for money into these foreign wars that is just laundered and ends up buying, for example, the Ukrainian Minister of Defense's $7 million home in Spain that he bought in the middle of a war with our money, right? They don't want to do that anymore. They don't want to be mandated to wear masks and inject these untested technologies into their bodies. They don't want it to be told, you can go to Costco, Walmart, you can go to the larger supermarkets, but you can't go down to your local store and watch the government destroy mom and pop businesses across the country. They don't want to see this. That's that 60%. We're unified. We're common sense. We're not radical. We need to stand together. And if we do so, then we could start changing leadership in the legislature. We could start changing some of these radical leftist representatives running as Republicans, and maybe even one day take out some of the radical Democrat elected officials. But it's going to take a concerted effort. It's going to take all of the citizens. It's going to take the local donors to get involved, and they've got to figure out how to do that.
Well,
I work with a group called Keystone Fair Business Partners, which is a 501c6. And Keystone Fair Business Partners actually has part of its mission is educating the public on critical issues like inflation. Because, as you know, most people don't understand what's going on with this inflation.
Yeah.
Go to the
grocery store, you'll understand.
Oh, exactly. In 2022, Keystone Fair Business Partners did a lot of educational effort with voters around inflation, crime, and other things. It was a great effort, great messaging, and really we could tell because of some of the responses that it sparked people thinking about things differently. It sparked people into maybe voting because we saw voter turnout increase in certain groups. So this is a local group that people could donate to that is incredibly effective at what it does. And there really is no national place where you can donate money that's going to have an impact on Chester County, Delaware County, Montgomery right. County, Philadelphia County, Bucks County. There is no national organization. There's no national party. There's nothing that's going to drive change in the messaging here. And if we don't change it, then these counties never recover. This state never recovers. This nation is lost.
Well, you know, one of the things that Senator Mastriano talked about, and we've said it many times here too as well, is if you have a candidate that you like, donate directly to them. You know, sending the money to the RNC or to the state GOP or even the county GOP is no guarantee that that money's going to come back to the candidate that you support, because what you need to understand is that the establishment part of the party has no vested interest in an outsider getting elected to office. We've talked about this, you know, many times on the show. But we saw it in general, you know, for all to see when Senator Mastriano was running for governor, you know, the establishment part of the party, I'm not any specifics here. I'm talking about, you know, the people, the money people and the stuff like that, because they had no interest in him winning, because if he won, then they would lose their control. And so they wanted to play this narrative that he was extreme or whatever, you know, but their extreme is our moderate. And then they had this self-fulfilling prophecy that, oh, well, he hurts the down ticket. Well, it was the other way around. Because we know for a fact that House and Senate candidates in certain areas were instructed not to associate with the Mastriano campaign, to hand out his materials or anything like that, because he would hurt their chances of winning. Okay, well, they lost anyway, and they actually hurt his chances of winning. And we've said it many times on the show, for somebody that was such a bad candidate, as the establishment wants to say, he got more votes than any Republican gubernatorial candidate except one in the history of Pennsylvania gubernatorial GOP politics. Man, I wish all my candidates were that bad. That's what I say.
Right.
You know, and so
you're raising a really important point.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to 22 and you roll forward into 23, what were we told were the reasons why Republicans did not win in 2022 in Pennsylvania? And in fact, the expected red wave turned into what I call the pink mist. It happened because of course, we had bad candidates. We know that because the Democrats elected such stalwart candidates as John Fetterman and the gentleman who had died 6 months before the election but still got elected. to the state legislature. I can't remember what district he was from. But they literally elected a dead guy. They elected John Fetterman, and the Republican Party then turns around and said, well, the Republican candidates weren't good candidates. And I know that to be false with regard to a lot of state representative candidates. In Southeast Pennsylvania, there were great people running and running good campaigns for state rep. They got no financial support or really any support from the party who was making these claims. All right, well, in 2023, the candidates run in school board races, in a lot of the countywide races, sheriff candidates and either county council or county commissioner, depending on the county you're in, what they call them, you know, county council or county commissioner candidates were fantastic in Southeast Pennsylvania. They lost. And not only did the Republican candidates lose, despite being great candidates, despite running in many cases, a lot of cases, great campaigns, digital, analog, you know, they were knocking doors, they were sending emails and texts, they were doing advertising of different kinds, did some mailers, great campaigns, and yet they lost, and in many cases by margins of loss, the margin between the losing candidate and the winning candidate was so extreme that it boggles the mind. It seems statistically impossible that that could happen. It's one of the reasons people point at these outcomes and say election fraud must be real.
Right.
So we've now, through 2022, looking at the real candidates that ran for these various positions, and now again in 2023, seeing great candidates not win. So is it really quality of candidate? Do we need to go out and find people as good as John Fetterman? Is that what we need? Because, of course, the argument, it's ludicrous on its face, right? So the other thing that we were told is that people lose because they run on the issues and nobody wants to know about the issues. Well, that's not true either, because the candidates that lost a lot of these races picked moderate issues to run on. They picked universally acceptable issues like property tax increases and fiscal irresponsibility by school boards or counties. They ran on bread and butter, what we used to call kitchen table issues, right? Because apparently if you mention the fact that there's child pornography in schools, you are talking about radical things. So that's clearly not it. It was not that they ran on radical things. And as we've talked about, Democrats run the most radical campaigns you could imagine, and they win.
Right.
They take positions that Americans don't support, and they win over and over again. So what is it that's causing these losses? And, of course, I think there are a couple of factors. One is, of course, the ineffectiveness of the party. There's no money. There's no support for candidates. It's just ineffective at the national level, the state level. Many counties are ineffective. Some are effective, but most are ineffective. And I think it's also this damaged brand. If you look at turnout, and you look at turnout for Republicans versus Democrats, it is steadily declining. You're not getting the registrations for the Republicans that are growing in many counties. You're seeing them stagnate, but you're seeing Democrat registrations grow. You're not seeing the turnout, even when turnout amongst Republicans was good in 2023, looking at certain precincts, turnout by the Democrats was excellent, both mail-in and in person. So turnout's the problem. Well, now the party turns and says, well, it's mail-in balance. That's why. That's what we have. We don't need to have a platform. We don't need to have issues that we stand on. It's all about mail-in balance. So the number one thing that the Republican Party spent its money and time on in 2023 was converting voters from in-person to voting by mail. And they would say they were trying to get more people to turn out. But it failed. Look at the turnout numbers. They converted some from voting in person to voting by mail. I suppose they can claim that a victory. But the turnout was terrible, and it was the number one issue driven by the state Republican Party in Pennsylvania. And what is their plan for 24? More focus on mail-in ballots. I mentioned this group, Keystone Fair Business Partners, who sent mail-in ballot applications to low-propensity voters in 2022. And while turnout amongst those low-propensity voters increased because they were getting educated on things like inflation and crime rates and things like that, and they said, wait, I should get out and vote. I should do something about this. 83% of them voted in person. Only 17% filled out the mail-in ballot and voted by mail.
Right.
So it proves that this mail-in ballot obsession, it's really almost creepy with the Republicans that they'll focus on that and ignore our border. But that's what they're going to focus on. That's where they're putting all their money. That's where they're putting all their time and energy. It didn't work in 23. They didn't get turnout to be anywhere near where the Democrats were. It was not successful. It did not create a surge of Republicans voting by mail or a surge of turnout. So that means there has to be a different effort, another effort to get these messages out. And again, I think that comes down to the populace. So we have things like this show where we talk about real issues. And we have groups. There were a couple of groups, going back to Chester County, there were a couple of groups that put out 845,000 messages in Chester County in 2023. Now, the problem, many of them were in support of candidates. Some of them were in support of just issues, general issues. Some of them were for organizations. But the problem is those messages came in only the 8 weeks around the election. So what I'm saying is my first phone call from the Democrat Party, my first text from the Democrat Party in 2022 came the day after the election. They started their new year the day after the election was over, the next morning. In 2023, the first communication I got from the Democrat Party was a text. It came the day after the election. About 3 days later, I got a postcard saying, please take this survey. When I took the survey, it wasn't just a fake survey asking for money. It was actually a legitimate survey. So the day after the election, they began to survey their populace, survey their potential voters, and go out and try to figure out where they could spend their time and money. The Republican Party typically doesn't do that, and candidates can't do that until they, A, run, get past maybe a primary, raise enough money to message, and then start messaging. Hence, everything happens in 8 weeks. When your competitor is in the market for 12 months and you're in the market for 8 weeks, your competitor is always going to win. So from that, a group of patriot groups that I spend a lot of time with have put together a communication plan for 2024 with the idea of getting the moderate, pro-American, pro-Constitution, pro-family message out to voters so they can at least hear it through the year. So at least there's some counter voice, some alternative to just this constant drumbeat from NPR. Now, obviously, well, nothing citizens groups can really compete with corporate media. But if you look at how the ground is shifting, if you listen to people like Joe Rogan, a couple of years ago, Joe Rogan was just sort of a normal leftist kind of citizen that didn't know much. But having done 15 years of interviews, he now has been educated, and he now is talking about Trump very favorably. He's talking about the Constitution as important. He's challenging the people that forced us all to get injected. You look at a guy named Tim Pool, he's made a similar journey from sort of a leftist to the center, to being a moderate like us. If you look at this, this is happening with people all over the state, all over the nation. We've got increasingly, I believe, a rapidly growing community of people who are not Republican necessarily. Maybe they used to be, now they're independent. They used to be Democrats, maybe they're now they're independent, or they're just what I call the disillusioned Democrat. And they've realized their party and their government is not serving them. And so there's a chance, hopefully, in 24, it's citizens groups, some of the ones I work with, maybe there are others, who can reach out and touch these disenfranchised, disillusioned Democrats, what I call the reluctant Republican. They don't really trust the party, but they'll listen to common sense. If we can reach some of them in 24, we could really have an impact in what happens this year. And if we can't either have the funding to do that or people just don't put the work in, then I don't know what other voices there are out there besides things like this show and work being done by citizens groups. I don't see any other force out there trying to drive this message.
And that's the real problem. I mean, you know, thankfully, you know, we have like, you know, the group in Chester County, Chesco United, who you guys you put that group together. That's a group that you're involved with, and you guys have done great work. We have the Indian Valley Conservative Group voice in Montgomery County, Caitlin Dernstein. She's done great work there. Andy Meehan in Bucks County with the Right for Bucks group. You know, there are these groups out there, but you know, it really needs to be a focused and concentrated effort that, you know, and hopefully we can, you know, at some point, you know, maybe put all these groups together to have a common goal of, I don't know, whether it's pick one candidate to focus on or fundraise or an issue or whatever the case may be. But the point I'm trying to make is that these groups do exist and they are out there. And there are people that are actively trying to make a difference. So it's not – so if you're listening to this – And you want to get connected to one of these groups, you know, reach out to the radio show. Go to the Facebook page of the Conservative Voice. You can message us, and we'd be more than happy to, you know, depending on what area you're in, whether it's Bucks County or Montgomery County or Chester County or Delaware County, and you know, we'd be more than happy to, because you're not going to get the answer you're looking for in your local Republican Party. You're just not, okay? They have no interest in you, okay? Their only interest is putting up the puppet that they decide is the person that they want to run for office. And if they win, they know they can control them. And if they lose, well, you know, we're in a Democratic area, so the Democrats, you know, they won. It has nothing to do with us. We did the best we could do, you know. But we'll take your money. Don't get me wrong. We'll take your money. You know, it's no coincidence that when your local party, whether it's the your county party or your state party, it's no coincidence the first thing they ask you is, how much money can you raise? You know, how much money do you have? How much can you raise? Okay. Is that really our criteria for picking a candidate? They don't ask you what you believe in. What do you stand for? You know, are you pro-life? Are you pro-Second Amendment? Do you believe in fiscal responsibility? Do you believe the individual rights and freedom? Is due process really important to you? Nah, it's how much money can you raise? Or do you have money?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's interesting when they go to the campaigns that do raise money and then say, well, okay, you've raised money for your campaign. You've got signs to buy and messages to send, texts and emails and pop-up ads. And you've got to buy, you know, pizza for the workers and you know, hold some events. But we don't care. Give us the money.
Right.
And they actually put the squeeze on the candidate, and some candidates give them the money. But most of the candidates, I think, then say, wait a minute, I've got a communications plan. I've got a team. I've got things I've got to pay for. I'm going to spend the money that was invested in my campaign on my actual campaign. And I think that's a smarter play. If people want to give to the party, well, okay. But if you're giving to a candidate, it should go to the candidate.
Well, exactly.
The group that I mentioned earlier was Keystone Fair Business Partners. And their plan for 24 is to fund a collection of different groups that are going to have an impact this year.
Right.
And it's got a pretty good strategy. So I'm anxious to see how well this goes.
Well, you know, but more importantly, I think that, you know, when you're choosing a candidate, so let's take a look. Okay. So I find it that there's no, I don't find it any type of coincidence that for some reason Dave McCormick got the endorsement of the Pennsylvania GOP before the last election. Okay. Now, of course, he also wrote a check, okay, to the GOP, which kind of probably greased the wheels. But did they really pick Dave McCormick because he represents Republican values and principles or what they're supposed to be? I mean, here's a guy that President Trump wouldn't support, okay, in the last election. He has known financial ties to China, and he's made no mistake about, you know, now, of course, he's backtracking all that now. But if you do a little research and you dig back into his statements on China, you know, it's pretty much self-evident. And yet those questions he hasn't answered those questions. Here's a guy that, out of all, when we were at the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference and all the candidates were, every senatorial candidate was there except one, Dave McCormick, because I guess it wasn't important to talk to a conservative voice or a conservative audience. Okay. So, you know, again, I'm not saying yay or nay on Dave McCormick. That's going to be up to your individual choice and all that stuff like that. But I'm just saying, look at how the establishment picks their candidates is what I'm trying to really get at, okay? And like if I get a candidate that wants to come to me and run, I'm advising them, don't even go to the party and ask for their endorsement or their blessings. Because more than likely, if you're a conservative, they're not going to give it to you anyway. And then they're going to make you look like an idiot, okay? Because that's going to be their goal. Because they already have their hand-picked candidate already lined up. So my advice is simply this, just don't, okay? So we're out of time, Gar. I'm getting waved at from the booth, so we're going to have to jump off. But we're going to continue this conversation. We've got a lot of things coming up planned, and we're going to continue to push forth on the effort of our moderate part of the party, those of us that love the U.S. Constitution. Thank you for listening to The Conservative Voice. Have a great weekend. I'm Don Beischel with Gary Heasley, and you've been listening to The Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. Courtesy of the